Stay hungry, stay foolish.
So now on the Innovation Show, I'm going to read out a list of people, which is Cher, Tom Cruise, Keira Knightley, Anthony Hopkins, Pablo Picasso, Leonardo da Vinci, Richard Branson, Henry Ford, Thomas Edison, Albert Einstein, Hans Christian Andersen, and W.B. Yeats. And that's only the tip of the iceberg. The common denominator between all these people is they both had dyslexia and literacy difficulties. And we're honored to have in our presence Dr. Pauline Kogan. Pauline has developed an early detection technique for literacy difficulties and dyslexia, and it's great to have you on the show. Thanks for joining us, Pauline.
Thank you, Aidan.
So I heard about you through your fantastic work, and I read some books about dyslexia and the gift of dyslexia, because it is a gift in a world where many rote tasks are being replaced by artificial intelligence. And I just think in that world, people who have been disregarded or have been life has been made difficult for them in the past, now will be liberated and will come to the freedom. But early detection is key for that to happen, because they need to be understood that they have either dyslexia or literacy difficulties of some sort, and you've developed a technique to discover this. So let's talk about that. But let's talk about your work. I know you've been, when I think of you, I think of the Lionel Messi, the football player who was, people were saying, oh, this guy's an overnight success. Mm-hmm. But he said, yeah, I've been in the academy for 18 years becoming that overnight success. Mm-hmm. And you've done immense work out of your own pocket to make this happen. And this story needs to be told. So let's talk about, Pauline, the technique you've developed.
Okay, I've developed an instrument called Test 2R. It's the Trinity Early Screening Test for Reading and Writing. And it's divided into two sections. There's an early screening section, which involves five little short tests, which cuts across and taps five of the major difficulties, which would be early signs of the condition. And if children do badly in just even one of those five areas, then the teacher who would be administering this test would then give the remaining 13 short little tests. And it would give the teacher a full picture of this child's learning needs. And if she does the interventions, which are also as part of the whole system, because this is a screening system for, it's screening, it's diagnosis and intervention and resourcing and electronic reporting. So it's the whole caboodle, really. And if the teacher runs those tests on that child, the teacher will have a teaching plan for up to 3 years.
Yeah. So it
will prevent those literacy difficulties in the child's future.
Yeah, because I think that's a really important point that I didn't make, is that it's not just detection, it's actually a process then to intervene and to make life more easy for the kids, so they can actually get through the system.
Yeah. And to take the messy idea, there was a lot of work went in to reading the literature. I actually read 140 years of research literature to find out what were the early signs of the condition and how these could be operationalized into short little tests that would be child-friendly, classroom-friendly, teacher-friendly, not take up too much time, and certainly not take up too much money. So this was done over 14 years. And of course, the 40 years before that, when I was working as a teacher and as a psychologist, that also informed the whole process to operationalize these early signs.
Yeah, so your real rich tapestry of your past has led to this. So it's not just, you're not approaching it from one lens on, which is really key, I think, to the whole thing.
Yeah, it's terribly important to know that This is joined up thinking. I remember Tony Blair used to talk about the only way you can solve this problem is through joined up thinking and to think in a fully comprehensive, informed way. So I trained as a teacher. I trained as a special ed teacher. I trained as a psychologist. I trained as a neurologist. I did a medical degree in Brussels. And then I did the PhD under the supervision of a fantastic professor in the School of Psychology in Trinity called Professor Ray Fuller, who was very interested in specific learning difficulties or dyslexia. So he was absolutely wonderful. And somebody like me would be inspired by somebody like him. You know, so it was because I had such a passion for what I was trying to do. Okay, it took 14 years, but it was easy to do in a way because I was driven kind of by the passion for it. And the Dean of Graduate Studies, she called me in one time and said, "Hey, what's taking you so long?" And I said to her, "You know, if I could use the bricks on the wall of your office to try to explain what I'm trying to do, you'll understand why it's taking me so long." And I have deliberately done it in an academic setting to give me, to give me academic rigor and international scrutiny.
Yeah.
That's why I did it. So it has stood up to the international scrutiny. And the leading test developer in the world has said that it's the finest piece of work that he's ever come across.
Yeah, and that's why the story needs to be told and people need to know about it. And also, you've put it out there. I mean, this isn't something that is a theory-based thing. You've tested it in the field.
Oh, yes. I piloted the study in 20 schools in the Greater Dublin area. Then I submitted it to all sorts of rigorous testing. And the little tests that withstood that rigorous testing, it's called floor ceiling effects. And then to make sure that it's age specific. And then it went to 189 schools nationally here in Ireland. And I did face-to-face training with every one of those 200 teachers. And that gave me a huge database. I then stress tested it for theoretical coherence. And that is what told me which were the most powerful individual little tests. And of course, each test had to represent a theory. Otherwise, it's not taken seriously. So I did that as well. Then I validated the test as it seemed to be coming out from the whole process. That was validated in May last year. And then I did national norms. So it is an Irish developed, rigorously tested, validated and normed test. It could not be better.
Yeah, and it'd be great to see this become a mainstream in the system.
Well, I have given it as a gift to the Irish state. I've given it to the Department of Education, who, by the way, have been very, very supportive in this whole process. And they, in fact, paid the psychologists who were validating and criterion testing the whole thing for me. They paid the salaries sessional psychology costs of 28 psychologists over 2.5 years. They've been absolutely wonderful. And the body that the education department has chosen is the Black Rock Education Centre. So the Test2R is available through the Black Rock Education Centre. And I have given it free to that body in the hope that they will roll it out across the state. And I am training schools and teachers nationally. All they have to do is get in contact with test2r training gmail.com, and I will go to the school and train the teachers, or I will collect them in education centres nationally. I'm doing that, like, I'm in Tarbert next week. I'll be in Ennis 2 days later. I'll be in Letterkenny on the 30th of September. So I'm nationally going around doing that.
Yeah, and I think it's really important to say, Pauline, and you know, I'll edit this out if you want me to, is that you're doing this and that the fee that you're getting is actually going back into the training, because you aren't doing this. This is a legacy.
Yes.
You want to make a difference in the world. And I think that's really important. And people, you know, people need to know that.
I met a wise old man once who told me there was no tow bar in a hearse.
Brilliant.
And I'm going to be 70 next year. So it would be a lovely thing to know that I could do this for Irish children, and that it could prevent the sorts of infuriating delay that I see on a day-to-day basis in my work as a psychologist, where children are referred for psychological assessment when it's, I won't say too late, but certainly diminishing returns, because we know from research since 1972 that for every year of delay after the second year in kindergarten or senior infants, there's a loss of 15% of potential. So you think about that. What does that give a child who's diagnosed in fifth class? It gives them 15% left of their potential. And that is a travesty.
Yeah, and on top of that, it's not only the potential, it's the chipping away at the confidence.
Absolutely.
And what that does, the kind of nurturing mm-hmm. of the brain to go, you know,
absolutely.
You can't do this. And, you know, these are the things, and the early detection, and you know, we had a chat before the show, and you mentioned that you can identify this.
Oh yes.
When the child is born, and some hospitals have mentioned this.
Yeah, I mean, there's a research group in Finland, in the National University Maternity Hospital in Finland, and they know at 4 days of age what child is going to have literacy difficulties and what isn't. Because when a child is in the womb, the sound of the mother's voice and of environmental noise is travelling across the amniotic fluid. And from 4.5 to 5 months of gestation, that baby has a hearing apparatus. The baby can hear. So when babies are born, they're attuned to the mother's voice and other voices in the environment, just like they're attuned to taste. You know, the mother's food, for instance, will be chosen by them. So they study head-turning behaviour in children. And for babies who are born into families in which there are literacy difficulties already, these children who are slow at turning their head towards their mother's voice, they know that they're going to have a problem. Now, if you know that, surely we know as well that children from the age of 2.5 in the United States are spotted because of the work of Halle Scarborough. If I were Minister for Health, I would have a nurse in every maternity hospital saying to the mother, listen, if your child is slow to speak, or if your child has constant ear infections or adenoid problems, you should see that as a red flag for literacy difficulties, because it's going to diminish the child's sensitivity to their environmental language.
Yeah.
And that is one of the major causes of literacy difficulties. It's arguable as to whether it's dyslexia or not, but the end result is the same thing. You're going to be slow at or have great difficulty in learning to read. But to answer your question, as they say after my roundabout spiel about that, there are very, very early signs of, you know, literacy problems. Difficulty learning the names of the alphabet. Difficulty learning the sounds of the alphabet. Difficulty with, and this cuts across dyspraxia as well, reversing of letters. Great difficulty with letter formation. Difficulty with vocabulary development. Difficulty with syntax. If a child has speech and language difficulties, and if they're not resolved by 5.5, those children go on to be dyslexic if their problems are complex. You know, we know all that stuff.
Yeah.
And my test operationalizes all of that and puts a score on it. It makes it objective. We also have a difficulty, if children have a difficulty naming things, for instance, if they say stuff or yoke or thingamajig or use what they call generalized language, or as the French call it, passepartout language, to name something, or if they point all the time instead of naming the object, that's a problem with long-term vocabulary in long-term memory. They can't access the word they want. That is one of the core difficulties of dyslexia or literacy difficulties. But the real core, which, you know, accounts for over 2/3 of all dyslexics, is difficulty learning phonics. Now, I could talk for a year and a day about the major mistake of teaching only phonics to children. Because some children, you're setting them up for failure by teaching only phonics. Whereas if you teach sight vocabulary as well, you're actually hedging your bets and making sure they come through the difficulty.
Yeah.
There are all sorts of other things as well. There are, there can be visual problems involved in dyslexia. And instead of going to an optician, if you think a child has a problem, you should go to an optician that's also a behavioural optometrist, because they can see, they can measure visual stress and the motor function of the eyes and all that. A behavioural optometrist who is an optician is the best port of call there. If children tend to skip lines or words, that's a very early sign. And of course, then there's the difficulty about things about balance or things, problem who are clumsy, children who are clumsy, or children who seem to have a great difficulty to make any process automatic. And yet, you know, they're smart.
Yeah.
You know, the important thing in all of this is that children who fail or who are doing badly are doing badly, and it's a surprise to their teacher and their parents, because they're bright kids. They come up with novel explanations for things and ask wonderful questions, but yet they seem to be doing badly in school. And when things don't add up, parents should get on the move when the children are four and start demanding input or intervention or assessment or screening. And my test can do that, and it can do it for free.
Yeah, and you've gifted it to the state as well.
I've gifted it to the state.
One of the things you mentioned was short-term memories. So short, you might say to someone who has literacy difficulties or dyslexia, grab a towel on your way down, and they will totally forget that. I heard, is that correct?
Yes, it is. That's not short-term memory only. It's what's known as working memory. Let me explain the difference between short-term memory and working memory. Short-term memory is the memory for something you've just heard, and you're able to repeat it automatically. Now, some children have a problem with that. But children who have specific learning difficulty or dyslexia, one of the core problems is working memory. And working memory is short-term memory with a twist. It's like expecting somebody to remember a series of digits backwards. Or if you say to your child, Tom, would you ever go up the stairs there? And would you get my handbag? It's on the right side of my bed. And on your way down, would you pick up that hairbrush that I left in the bathroom? And they're gone up three steps up the stairs, and they turn around. What did you say again?
Yeah, so it's the sequence of things.
It's the sequence of things. It's short-term memory, which you do some manipulation on and then expect it to come out with a different form of that memory. And we use that. It's really important, because that's what we do when we use phonics to decode a word. You're adding on sounds to what you've already decoded.
Yeah.
For longer words, you're adding on syllables. That's working memory. Comprehension for especially complex sentences, that's working memory. Knowing the gist of a story, that's working memory. And adding and subtracting in mathematics, or multiplying where you have to carry, what we used to call carry, or where you have to break up a 10 in subtraction, that's working memory.
Yeah.
And that's why working memory is a big causal factor in the difficulties of dyslexic children.
So this leads me to the gifts of dyslexia, yes, and the gifts of literacy difficulties, because we talked on this show to Seth Godin, renowned thought leader and marketing guru, and we talked to Dennis Mortensen, who has developed artificial intelligence that replaces stuff like diary management. So rote tasks, essentially. But both those guys said the linchpin in the new world, in the world that we're in now and will become more and more commonplace, are people who have big picture thinking, who don't need to worry about those rote tasks, don't need to worry about those things, but can think differently. Mm-hmm. And they're the people who go against the grain. And you mentioned one thing that really resonated with me was skipping sentences or skipping words within a sentence. And the gift there is that, you know, if I speak French, so if I see the chair, it's La Chaise, I know that because I've seen it and I have associative memory to the actual thing. While someone with dyslexia or literacy difficulties will actually skip words like the or adverbs and stuff that don't actually have a physical.
Yes, they're not content words. Yeah.
So the content words. So they actually formulate a big picture. So they actually look at, like, so the cat sat on a mat, and if, you know, they might go, oh, that's obviously the cat sat on a mat because I see cat sat mat.
Yes.
And where, while if you said the cat jumped over the mat, or you started out lovely, the cat was lovely and jumped, they actually will still will kind of almost guess that.
Yes.
But that leads to gifts like connecting the dots on a bigger plane of actually like an ecosystem and kind of being able to see that ecosystem. Can we talk about those kind of gifts for a second, Pauline?
Absolutely. And as you were speaking there, Aidan, I was just remembering a book that I read a long time ago. Gosh, it's a long time ago. It was about the two kind of learners. One is an inchworm. And the inchworm is the person who, you know, is asked to add 1,417, 2,337, 6,000, blah, 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 you know. And they do it inch by inch from the units column, tens column. Then the other learner, who is the dyslexic, he's the butterfly. He gets the answer by front loading and adding up the thousands. And he'll get a ballpark. And that's, he'll get a ballpark answer. And then he'll go back and get the exact answer. But oftentimes dyslexics are people who are absolutely wonderful at mathematics, but they don't know how they got the answer because they're butterflies.
Yeah,
they're able to jump.
That's a beautiful visual, actually.
They're able to jump. But I have to kind of bring you back to reality before we then explore the whole giftedness side of dyslexia. You know, it's easy to say that dyslexia is a gift. But if you're a child or the mother or father of a child who's coming home every day upset, can't face their homework, they're brokenhearted and they're broken by the system that doesn't understand them, it's very easy to talk about the gifts of dyslexia. But it's really important to know that they do have gifts. And if you can get them through the critical mass of literacy and then take the weight from their wings and let them fly and use their gifts, like the Richard Bransons of this world, who left school without being able to read or write, but he was able to say, I don't care, I'm going to do it my way. And when you can free children from that, or when you have parents that will free children from that and allow them into arenas where they can excel, that's the hope of the future, really. Yeah.
And that's the hope of your work as well, because if it's all interlinked, and I'm not sugarcoating it, Pauline, because I suppose I'm showing what can we achieve if this work is done, and if your program is adopted, this is what we can look forward to. We can look forward
to
kids avoiding that, because, you know, so many people with dyslexia I've read about have been bullied, have been humiliated, and in the past it must have been so much worse when we were even more ignorant to conditions like this, was like, and literacy difficulties. We just said people were stupid. We stood them on top of the class, humiliated them.
Yeah.
They're not complying to. Yeah. They're not being the person that sits at their desk and complies, and that's why you see people like Richard Branson, who have overcome that and developed grit and determination. Mm-hmm. And not caring about what people said, coupled with, and I know this is a big thing that you're a big proponent of, Pauline, is warrior parents who fight for them.
I love them.
Yeah.
Oh, I love them. There's one particular mother who lives here in the north of Dublin. She has six sons. Every one of them are dyslexic. And she rings me up every now and again and she says, son, we'll call him son number three, says, I hate my dyslexia. I can't stand it. And I'm saying to her, stick with it. You're doing a great job. I have shown her how to handle the whole phonics thing, you know, and how to support children by visual memory and, you know, visual sight vocabulary. And I said, once they get out of school, once they're free from that, the lead will be taken from their wings. And they'll be able to fly. Now, her first son, it is just stunning. He was so bright, but he was never assessed. I only assessed him after he had left school. And he had got 395 points in his leaving cert, in spite of never having 1 minute of learning support. He was taken up by the banks. After I did the assessment on him, I wrote actually to his employer and I said, look at this young man and what he can do for your bank, because he's amazing. He has since been headhunted 3 times, and the last organization that headhunted him gave him the money to set up his own company so that he could fly even wider. But the deal is he always has to be accessible to them. But they have funded his company.
That's now, phenomenal.
That is awaiting her other sons. And it's awaiting all of the children who can have faith in themselves and who will get over those hard, tough years, particularly of secondary school.
Yeah. And you see, like I've seen it, Pauline, where, you know, we live in the world of the jock and the sports guys being the heroes. And in schools, and I have to say, I always sort of found it unjust that, you know, there's a book I read called Outliers, Malcolm Gladwell, and he opens the book and he talks about, he does a commentary of a hockey game in Canada, and it's like the 5th of January passed to the 12th of January to the 17th of January, and you're kind of going, what is this? And the whole book is about, this section of the book is about the fact that when somebody is born in that year, somebody who's born on the 17th of December, in because we group people by age, we put them all together, and somebody might be a year more physically advanced, 11 months more physically advanced. Then the coaches put more attention to those people because they're the better players. They're easier to deal with because they're a year more physically advanced. Then they get into the academies. Then they get into the system, and it's hard to get out of the system. And meanwhile, because of that, because of that system of grouping them by age, we lose so many talents. And this is one of the parallels I see with the work you're doing. While in New Zealand, the best team in the world, 90% win rate, I think it is at the moment, we have groupings by weight. And you have players coming through the system because they retain their confidence all the way through. And they get into the system then, and their talents are freed because they're weighted by it. And the same at Barcelona, places like this. They do this and they play without shoes. So they take away all the kind of differentiators. Yeah, the trappings, as you say. And they allow people be themselves. And I love your analogy. They allow them be butterflies, and they allow them find themselves and grow into themselves and all those kind of things. But jumping on from that, so the gifts of creativity that we see, because one of the common denominators I saw with architects is that so many architects, so many world-renowned architects have dyslexia.
That's right.
And, you know, when I looked into this, I was like, this is amazing, because the way people with dyslexia see the world is in this three-dimensional almost world.
That's
so they'll look at something, and because one little anecdote I read was that a dyslexic child may be able to recognize their mother by seeing the corner of their elbow or the corner of their shoe as they walk around the corner, or their friend, and go, oh, that's Johnny there. Johnny's walked around the corner. You're going, how did you see that?
Yeah.
And those kind of skills, and that's the big picture thinking again, but also the vision to be able to see this three-dimensional world for an architect or even for somebody who has vision and can see the completed product as if it's right there in front of them. It reminds me of what we're seeing now with virtual reality and augmented reality, and those they actually see the world that way.
Yeah.
So can we touch on that for a second?
Oh, absolutely. You know, and there's a huge literature on the size of the brain. You see, the left side of the brain is where language is processed, and because we're language users and speakers, the normal brain, the left side, to process language, is bigger than the right side. Okay, but in dyslexics, the two sides are of equal size. And why is that? There is more neurology on the right side of a dyslexic's brain than on the left side. And what that's there. There are two theories about it. One is that cell death did not die. You know the idea of use it or lose it. And if we have a lot of stimulus and all that sort of stuff, and we hear language, you know, children who hear an awful lot of language, it helps the right or the left side of the brain to expand. But the right side of the brain, why is it not smaller in dyslexics? It's because they, I think, use it more. The right side of the brain is for the melody of the human voice. That's how children recognize their mother's voices. It's how they learn music so quickly. Many of these people are brilliant at mathematics and at music. And some of them are brilliant at both, and others are brilliant at just one. But mathematics is about spatial relationships. They're also brilliant at colour. And when you think about colour, the beauty and the aesthetics of colour is how they relate to one another. Gradations of it, contrasts, all that sort of stuff. And it's also having to do with area and how area sits, you know, in relation to other areas. And that's really what architects do. And musicians, what's music? Music is tonality, and it's about fractions of sound. And do you know that music is perfect fractions? It's fractions of the octave. And that's why they're so brilliant at that as well. For instance, I had a conversation with a mother from Cavan this morning, just before I left my house. And she was telling me about her son, Jack. Now, Jack has terrible literacy problems, and he's a diagnosed dyslexic. And he has been dyslexic since the day he was born. And she knew from knowing me what the problem was very early on. But Jack has recently discovered the internet, and he has discovered YouTube, and he has taught himself to play the piano in 4 months. He has taught himself to play the piano to now be at the equivalent of grade 8. And he played the Moonlight Sonata for me the Sunday before I went away on my holidays. And I literally was moved to tears, because this is the first time that I've seen this child with joy on his face.
That's awesome. It's so good to hear, because that was one of the other points I read about. It's the gift of mastery. That someone with dyslexia or any literacy difficulties can, when they find a passion, and I suppose this is our job as parents, if we're fortunate enough to be able to give children the opportunity to be like a bee or to use the butterfly to go from flower to flower to find the one that works for them.
Exactly.
They'll find and they'll master that so quickly. Mm-hmm. And this is you know, this is not a fictional book. This is there's so much evidence of this. They'll master so quickly, and that's a perfect example right there.
The really important point in all of this, Aidan, is to allow the child to pick the method they want themselves, and don't start helping them until they ask for help, because by giving them the help, you're actually sometimes even smothering or shutting down that creativity in them. They need to do it their way.
Yeah, and we do it as parents. We kind of tend to kind of just do it for them to do it quicker and stuff like that. And it's wrong. And we have to actually check ourselves. But it's really interesting, Pauline, on that point. Pádraic Ó Cadhg was on the show, founder of Air Éireann. Fantastic interview from a fantastic man. He talked about when he was teaching that he got the kids to develop their own mathematics books, so training books. They picked what colour they wanted to do it in.
Brilliant.
They picked what way they wanted to do it. And this is why I just thought the work you're doing is so key for people to know about, because when we can unlock that in people, magic happens. And the list I read is only a tip of the iceberg. And, you know, we've seen so many.
I love that, Aidan, letting magic happen.
Yeah.
Because that's really, when you let magic happen in a child's life, it's the most amazing, wonderful thing.
And that's our, you know, like, it's a quote from, I think, the Spider-Man movie, but he talks about with great gifts come great responsibility. And
absolutely.
If you have any position of authority or leadership, using that to unlock, and as a parent, that's the job. I mean, our job is to unlock that and create the facilitation or the test bed. And I read this about innovation, actually, and it's the same with innovation. As an innovation, you're the farmer who creates the soil for the plants to grow. You don't make the plants grow.
And you know, it's a lovely thought, but I'm on the national executive of the Irish Learning Support Association. It's the organisation for teachers who are learning support and resource teachers in schools. And I am absolutely inspired by what I see in schools. The young teachers, and they just have the bit between their teeth for the children. And I'm always saying to them, you know, when I stand before them, and I have the privilege of standing before many of these people, I say to them, you know, if I should give you one piece of advice about how to teach a child who has learning difficulties, just listen to them. Pare back what you want to teach. simplify it, pare it back, do it in small steps, but above all, teach it with love. Because if you don't do that, you're going to fail. And the child is not going to listen. But if you teach it with love, they will spot that. The four-year-old knows when the teacher likes them. And the four-year-old knows when the teacher doesn't like them. And I interview children all the time before I assess them. And it is absolutely extraordinary. The children that I know which ones are going to succeed because of the teachers who have been kind of Amazon mothers in a way. We were talking about Amazon mothers earlier. But you can have teachers who are Amazon mothers on a temporary basis for those children as well. And they will fight tooth and nail for every hour and every minute of access to learning support. Yeah, you know, it's so good to see what's going on in schools.
And it's and it comes back to the knowledge and just knowing about it. I mean, people need to know. You know, we've talked in the show about cyber security and cyber threats and all this kind of stuff. And the basic thing is always, the first thing is knowledge, knowing what you're dealing with. And that's why I think the work you're doing is so fantastic, because every part of it, it's from the root to the fruit. So if you can get in at the root stage as a parent and understand and intervene and fight, as you said, the Amazonian mothers and fathers, to fight to get the fertile ground for people to blossom, that's just immense when that can happen. And I know, you know, not everybody will make it through, and unfortunately there's been some casualties, because I read that list, and some people who have dyslexia or have literacy difficulties have not made it through the system and have been casualties of the system. But for those who are listening to the show who have dyslexia and literacy difficulties, who have, like, a tip of the cap to you, and you know, your the gifts you have are immense, and we need to tell people about the work Pauline's done. We need to tell people about the system that Pauline's developed and spread the word.
But, you know, I'd like to add too that I want to dwell for a minute on a less happy situation of the children who don't get help early. And a friend of mine did a study in Mountjoy Prison. 97% of people in Mountjoy Prison have literacy issues. And for sure, 64% of those have dyslexia. The only people that do not have literacy issues are white-collar workers who actually are in jail for whatever reason or another, or long-stay prisoners who have got literacy tuition in prison. Now, we know that there is a 23% cycle of disadvantage among the population in Ireland, and we know that 23% of the population can't read the label on an aspirin bottle. Now, I think that that is a national disgrace. And if children got help very early, and you also have to put in language training into disadvantaged areas, if that can be put in place, and we have the wherewithal to do that without any great cost,
yeah,
it's all possible.
Yeah, and I was talking to you before the show, Pauline, about Mike Feinberg, who's co-founder of KIPP, Knowledge is Power program.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what I found fascinating and encouraging and inspiring about him and about what you're doing is it takes one person, or it takes two people. Like him and a colleague decided, you know what, if we complain, we're just part of the problem.
Yes.
And
you have to be part of the solution, don't you?
Yeah, and he looked himself in the mirror and said, am I doing everything I can as a teacher? No, I'm not. And they started that system.
Yeah, you have to stand up and you have to do what you think is right. But you can also have people in powerful positions that block your way. Yeah.
And we talked about this with Mike. You know, yeah. I'll send you an interview with Mike. It's fascinating because it's the exact same. And I brought it back to innovation, to the show's The Innovation Show. It's the same thing with innovation. There'll be blockers there because they're happy in the status quo. They do not want you to change. They're being remunerated for the way things are today.
What is it that Machiavelli said? Those who are happy with the status quo are net gainers from the same.
Yeah. Back in when the prince.
It's
it was
way
in the
back.
Prince.
Yeah.
This is happening since the dawn of time. People do not want you to know the earth is round and not flat.
Yes.
And it takes us all to fight together to let that message get out there. And Pauline, anything else to add before we close up?
Well, I should explicitly say that Test2R my early screening and diagnostic test is available through the Black Rock Education Centre in, you know, Keele Avenue, County Dublin, and they will get it. You just key in Black Rock Education Centre and you'll get the website. And there's a page on that website about test 2R. I believe that they're charging €250 a unit plus €25 for packaging. But in my view, it will probably be the single best expenditure that any school or teacher will make to prevent literacy difficulties. And it will also endorse what they're doing for children who are succeeding.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it makes everyone a winner.
Yeah. And it's important to add, you've gifted that.
Yes, I've gifted that. Yeah, I have nothing to gain financially from this. And I have funded the whole thing myself. 12 years in Trinity paying fees is no joke. And at a time when my husband was ambassador abroad and I was living here trying to get the whole thing done. But I did it because I have a passion to help children. And I want to be somebody who changed things in children's lives. That's all I wanted to do.
Yeah. Well, you have, for those who have benefited from the programme, have absolutely. And you mentioned Jack from Cavan, and that's just a beautiful memory. So let's make sure that more people become butterflies and spread their wings. And
it's,
thanks to you,
it's
Paul.
A lovely thought, Aidan. And I wish you the best of luck in what you're trying to do as well, because it's all joined up thinking, isn't it?
So if people want to get in touch, Pauline, where can they reach you?
Well, they can follow me on Twitter at Pauline Cogan, and then they can get me on the web at paulinecogan@test2r.com, or they can get me at test2rtraining@gmail.com.
Pauline Cogan, Dr. Pauline Cogan, thank you very much.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.